and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Friday on today's program. It's going to be a fun day talking to people around the country and hearing what's going on out there. We've gotten so many emails this week, too, for the Ag PhD mailbag. We got a bunch of mailbag questions to get to, too, Brian, to get caught up.
All right, so I'm Brian Hefty, along with my brother Darren, and yes, we are broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Happy to be back in the studio. Been traveling around the country and actually around Canada as well this week. So it's been a lot of fun talking to farmers from many different areas. But yeah, we want to get to the Ag PhD mailbag right away. Maybe.
It's the mailbag!
Hey, there we go.
All right, got one from Zach, and he's in Kansas. He said, I'm wondering what your options on banding P and K dry with the strip tiller in 30-inch rows. Our soils range from fine clay to very coarse sand, and it'd primarily be used on irrigated corn with 200-plus bushel potential yield goals. Wondering your opinion on the depth of the placement. Does it vary in the clay soils versus the sand? Should we be worried about getting that band too salty? Just wondering what your experience is.
Yeah, and he said sandy, but he didn't say what's the cation exchange capacity.
No, and it'd be interesting, Zach, because Brian likes to give the example of a farmer in Canada that said, on my sandy ground, well, the sandy ground was heavier than almost anything that we farm. And we farm kind of some medium to heavy ground. So your sand, I'm assuming, is really pretty sandy based on where your farm is, that it's probably a CEC under 10. But it would be nice to know, because it makes a big difference if your CEC is 2 or if your CEC is 8. That's a lot of difference.
Right. So here's the point. The drier it is and the sandier it is, then the more concerned we get about salt. So since we don't know necessarily every year if it's going to be wet or dry, unless obviously you have irrigation, then we kind of have to look at that when you say sandy, and we're going to assume the CEC is low, but we would like to know. Anyway, in terms of depth, I would just tell you, for a long time, I've really liked going deep, getting down 8, 10 inches deep, whether I'm doing that with a shank or a colt or something. I want to get deep, and the reason why is because if you were to take, let's say, 3-inch soil tests going all the way down to a foot deep, where would most of your fertility be? Well, I think you and I both know most of your fertility is probably in the top 3 inches. Where are the majority of your roots? Probably below 3 inches. So if it's me, I'd like to spread that fertility out. And how much should you put on? You know, that's a good question. You can try some different things. You can also dig some roots as you go through the season and just see if you're burning any roots off. But, you know, you don't have to get crazy carried away or anything. We're not trying to overall build the soil by doing a strip till. What we're trying to do is feed the plant this coming year.
Yeah, Brian, we get a number of questions. On our most recent television program that aired, we were talking about potentially taking off some plant residue, baling it up or whatnot. And Robert said, taking the trash off is just asking for a hard pan soil eventually. And another comment was, you're going to lose a lot of nutrients taking that trash off the field. And, you know, I guess, you know, just thinking about that, Brian, what are some situations where we would take some residue off the top of the ground, and why would we not?
All right. Well, first of all, I don't like calling it trash. It's not trash. It's crop residue. And yes, absolutely, there are some nutrients in there. So the whole thing is, we're not trying to advocate, oh, everybody should take residue off of their fields. We're just simply saying there are a lot of people that do it. Let's look at the pluses and the minuses to that. So when we talk to a lot of the cellulose ethanol people, for example, they're going to talk about taking a third or maybe half of the residue off the field. Well, if you're still leaving half out there and you're raising 250 bushel corn and 80 bushel beans, you know, you still have a fair amount of stuff there. I'm not that terribly worried about it. The big thing in terms of building soil organic matter is leaving roots intact. So if we've left the roots alone, we've left half to maybe two-thirds of the residue on top of the ground. Number one, I'm not worried about hard pan. Number two, we're still going to be building organic matter, not decreasing it. So yes, you've taken some nutrients away, and yes, you've taken some cover for the ground away. So both of those things are obviously concerns, And you better get paid well to take the residue off that you are removing.
All right. Thanks for the feedback. We really appreciate that. Thanks for watching the show. I went from Lyle here in Nebraska. He said, I saved all the plot data info on your first step plots at your field day from last year. Where do you guys share the yield results that resulted from those treatments?
At our Ag PhD workshops in the winter and at our field day in the summer. In order to get a lot of these high yield farmers to even come to our farm and share their information, they're pretty protective of a lot of that stuff. So when this first started 5 years ago, we basically just made an agreement with these farmers to say, we're not going to put your stuff on TV. We're not going to put your results on the radio or anything like that. What we're going to do is we'll just do it to a limited audience in the winter at our workshops and then in the summer at our Ag PhD field day. So if you'd like to hear the results to that, we just have a couple of workshops left in the, we're calling them 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. So let's see, we're next Wednesday in Fargo, North Dakota, and Thief River Falls, Minnesota. The following week, we're in Baltic, South Dakota. The week after that, we are down in Brinkley, Arkansas. So we've got four left, I believe.
All right. Hey, thanks for the feedback. Thanks for coming up to our field day, too. And our field day this year is Thursday, July 25th. So you can mark that date on your calendar and plan on coming to our farm again for that. Got a comment here from Tarek. He said, just wanted to let you know I really appreciate the show. And you were talking about pre-emerge corn herbicides. Wanted to know what would the timing be for those pre-emerge corn herbicide applications? Do you like them early pre? Do you like them right before you plant or right after you plant?
If you're going to work them in right before you plant is great. If you are not going to work them in, we prefer early applications. Like, for example, for us, we're going to plant sometime in April. We'd like to put them out in March. That'd be great. That way we have that much more time to get rain on them. We typically have zero weed emergence until we get to mid to late April, sometimes even early May. So we have plenty of time to get rain on to get them activated before the weeds get going. If you spray after you plant, you've got to get rain pretty quickly.
All right, it's Farmer Friday on our show today. We'll be right back after this.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an AgriSk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Using NSERV nitrogen stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show NSERV delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and NSERV is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Farmer Friday. We're going to hear from farmers around the country today and also get to a number of the Ag PhD mailbag questions that have come in this week. We'll start off down in Tennessee. We've got Doyle on with us. Doyle, how's it going?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. How are things going on your farm? Do you have a good year in 2018?
Well, I almost made the national average on the corn and the soybeans, but not quite.
Yep. Now, is that due to lots of rain or lack of rain, or what were conditions like for you?
Well, the timing of the rain, mostly. Now, we had really too much rain at times and not enough at other times, actually. So it was a battle last year. Of course, we don't irrigate anything. We're all dry land here.
Okay. Hey, let me ask you a question, Doyle, then. When you're in dry land and when it comes to cover crops, what are you seeing in your area? Are you using cover crops? Do you have neighbors using cover crops? And how's that working?
I am, as a matter of fact. I am using cover crops. Cover crops, you've got to get the timing right. At first, when I first started using them, I burned down a little too soon. I was under the impression that you needed to burn down a month ahead of your planting dates to compensate for insect pressure.
Sure.
But I'm realizing that I need to schedule that a little bit closer to planting time, and then if there is insect pressure, just use something to take care of that. I don't like leaving the ground bare for a month.
Yep, I'm with you on that. That's a good strategy. Now, do you use cover crops in between everything that you're doing or just in certain parts of your rotation?
I'm decreasing the cover crop now. When I first started it, I had pretty much the whole farm, but now I've gone back to some winter wheat, and so I've cut back on the cover crop. I really like the results. It's a little too early to tell whether or not it's building up the soil, but I really like the way they help with everything else, especially the weeds.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, the weed control is something I think that's a little underrated with cover crops. It's really made a big difference. I know guys fighting mare's tail have commented on it. It's been so much better, and even Palmer pigweed control has been better. You know, winter wheat kind of plays that thing, too. It's kind of like a cover crop that you get paid for, isn't it?
Yes, mm-hmm. That's correct.
Now, I don't want to get into the arguments of what the wheat price is and if that's worth it or not, but I do like that. I love winter wheat in the rotation if a guy can do it. Going into this year, do you see yourself switching anything up in the rotation the way crop prices are, or are you going to kind of hold steady?
Well, we've only got close to 600 acres of crop land, so there's not a whole lot of rotating that I usually do, just minimal. So it's not going to change much.
Sure. Yeah, I think everybody's getting all excited this year, and more times than not when we're talking to farmers, they're saying, I'm not going to change a whole lot on my farm this year, but maybe some other guys are, and I guess we'll see how that plays out. Well, hey, Doyle, it was great talking to you today. Good luck here going into the spring of 2019, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you very much. You too.
You bet. Thanks. Got Rob Sharkey on us right now with Shark Farmer Radio and also with the Shark Farm. Rob, how's it going today?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. How did things turn out on your farm? Did you get fall work done that you wanted to get done, or you still got some stuff you got to clean up in the spring?
No, we were in a really good situation here, and I don't talk about it because everybody struggled with a wet fall and everything, but no, we had like a perfect fall. So not only did we get done harvesting in good time, and we got all the anhydrous we wanted to get on, we got all the field work done, all the end rows worked up. So no, I'm sitting in pretty good shape.
Outstanding. Yeah, it is a challenge. You're right. A lot of guys had a struggle. We had a struggle this fall, but that's just how it goes sometimes. It kind of comes and goes, and it's one of those fun things. But, you know, it really did change the story on a lot of farms. I know you've been talking to farmers and other people involved in agriculture really all over the place. What are you learning this year? What have been some of the cool stories you've been talking about on Shark Farmer Radio?
Oh, geez. You know, it's such an amazing opportunity, and especially that you guys have afforded me. But I'm learning so many different aspects of agriculture outside of my own little bubble of just corn and soybeans. And especially with doing the show, you know, having people reach out that are doing such an incredible like just different type of side farming, like, you know, fur farming and, you know, avocados where you're still raising soybeans. I mean, just stuff that I would never expect, you know, agriculture to be. So, yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, Emily and I have just been loving this year because we're learning so much about different aspects of ag. And gosh, it's, well, you know, being on the radio is just flat out fun.
No, it's a lot of work, Rob. It's just all hard work.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Slaving behind that microphone. You know, I do like that aspect of it too. Talking to, well, we're just talking to Doyle down in Tennessee, and they raise some different crops that we don't raise up here and have different challenges that we have. And, you know, you're talking to folks in all different parts of agriculture, like you say, and it's good, because a lot of us as farmers, we get so caught up in just, well, what are we doing in our area? And we don't even realize the challenges that are happening around the country.
Yeah, that's so very true. I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in your own fence rows and not look beyond that. But it's so important that we do. It's so, because not only has it, you know, like been interesting and entertaining, but I feel like it's helped my farm too.
I think hearing behind the scenes stuff is what I like the most about your show. Just, you know, when you hear stats about the struggles dairy farmers are going through, for example, and then you talk to a dairy farmer and he says, man, this is how it impacts my family. And this is how, you know, when the business is going good, it impacts my family just with the time requirements, but the financial struggles and the emotional struggles. And those are things that it's just amazing that people will share on your show.
Well, I mean, it does take some time to try to find somebody because, I mean, we are farmers, right? We don't like to talk about bad stuff. We don't like to talk about how it's dealing with us emotionally or in that. So, you know, when we find someone that is willing to share with us, I mean, to me, it's like a big gift to the rest of agriculture.
What do you have coming up? Have you got some interesting guests lined up, or you have some ideas of, hey, I'd really like to explore this part of agriculture a little more. I'm looking for some good guests in this type of area.
Well, I tell you what, today's a perfect example, right? Because we had today's guest scheduled, let's see, probably 2 weeks now. And then now she's caught up in a snowstorm. So like at last minute, we're struggling here to get a new guest. So, I mean, there's stuff like that that we're still learning. But no, I do like to continually focus on, especially like the livestock end of it, because, you know, when you look at the rural ag radio, I feel like a lot of the agronomy is already talked about. And, you know, you guys do such a good job at covering stuff like that and the other shows too. So, you know, I do like to go more towards the livestock. Plus it's, I mean, you know, right now you brought up with like the dairy, even with the hog guys, I mean, it's not an easy time, just like the rest of ag.
Yeah, and you've sure lived that out too with your own experience, and just adding that to the mix has been pretty cool too, where you can really empathize with a lot of the guests that you have on.
Yeah, it's, you find yourself thinking that in the back of your head when you're hearing people talk. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So I don't know if that makes any difference or not when you're interviewing them, but hopefully it makes me a little more of understanding.
All right, Rob, where can people find out more about you and what's going on in your operation and with your show?
Well, you go to sharkfarmer.com. That's where we've got everything. We've got the two podcasts, the Shark Farmer podcast, the What the Farm podcast, and then I've got the Shark Farmer Radio there as podcast forms.
Yeah, it's sure been fun watching your program grow and develop, and trying to keep up with you on social media has been a challenge for me too. I'm not quite as adept at that, but Rob, thank you so much. I appreciate you spending a little time with us today, and look forward to your show later today.
No, thank you too very much. Appreciate it.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, we're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. And it's Farmer Friday, so we're going to be talking to farmers around the country and also answering the Ag PhD mailbag. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. Talking to farmers around the country on Farmer Friday. We've got Kevin with us out in the western Kansas, eastern Colorado area. Which state do you associate with, Kevin? Both of them? Or is there one that you say, no, I'm a Colorado guy or I'm a Kansas guy?
Well, I live in Colorado, so I guess I should associate with them. There are times I maybe don't want to, but we won't get into that conversation. But, most people, when they think Colorado, they think you live in the mountains, and they don't realize about a third of our state's about the same as Kansas. So,
yeah,
it's just all plains. But, wide open spaces. Somebody said we don't live at the end of the earth, but you can see it from where we live. So it's kind of the middle of nowhere here, but...
Yeah, it is pretty cool, though. And you're right. I'd say most people that I talk to, if you say something about Colorado, it's like, oh, and the mountains and the skiing and all this kind of thing. And there's a lot more than just that there. And so in your area, what are the challenges right now? I would assume you've got a lot of irrigation in your area. Is water quality and supply good?
You know, the water supply has fallen off, and we're trying and it's hard to change years of thinking, but we found we can with today's farming practices, we can almost do more with less water. And so we're trying to cut back some on our irrigation. We have good quality water, but it's just wells are falling off. We've pumped for a lot of years, and so we found that we can drop populations on planting corn and yet still hit profitable yield levels. But by dropping populations, you save on seed, you save on fertility, and you can save on water. And so we found things like that are helping. It's hard when ground's rented out at full irrigated levels to put in your mind that you can cut back on stuff. And you're not going to hit as high a yield. You're cutting back and you're saving on energy costs of pumping water. You're saving on a lot of things. And so, we've we're trying to, you know, use our water a little more efficiently because it's not an inexhaustible resource.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, we're trying to be more efficient with everything that we're doing in ag. And I think it's interesting. We're talking to farmers more and more around the country that are looking at profit per acre and trying to figure out, okay, what can I do on each field to make more money, and even giving up some of that high-priced cash rent ground that just it's pretty tough to make it on that. Is that kind of the case in your area too? Like you talked about some of this full-priced for full irrigation kind of ground. Is that a tough deal to make go?
Well, it's you just have to sit down and, you know, and pencil it out. It's if you can cut back on your inputs enough that you can still pay the rent, you know, that works. But you know, it's hard when, you know, people have bought ground or whatever at assuming that the wells are going to be there, you know, and for right now they are, but you just want to, you know, you've got to just make sure that we're using it in such a way that it will stay there for, you know, another generation. And so everything's got to be evaluated. You know, we all know that now is not a time where you can just kind of hope to get by. You've got to pencil things out and really, really make things work, you know, to the best of your ability right now. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't necessarily given up any ground, but I don't think we've been we've really locked in anything crazy, you know, to try to have ground. You know, we've tried to be smart about it, and we're on the operation where we are, we're about 2/3 dry land and about 1/3 irrigated. But it's like anybody, no matter what part of the country you live in, it's got to pencil out. So
yeah, that's for sure. Well, hey, Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate you sharing what's going on in your neck of the world, and hope to hear from you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Got Dennis with us. Now, Dennis is in Kansas. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, we're just a little chilly.
Well, hey, it is February. Come on. Now, if you're saying that in May, then we might be a little nervous about it. But February, that's kind of the norm.
Well, you know, I was just visiting just earlier about that. You know, we had several years. It was just kind of funny. You could run around with barely a jacket on, and we never really had a winter. And then when we do get normal, then we start complaining. But this is what it's supposed to be here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we always hope that this global warming thing we hear about really takes place in the months of December, January, and February on our farm. the rest of the year, we don't need it. But this time of year, that would be welcome. Because today, it's cold.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, the regular climate that we experience down here, you know, I know I'm older, but, you know, you walked uphill going to school and walked uphill coming home, too. You know that story. So
absolutely. Yeah, our grandpa told us that. And then we kind of figured out where he grew up. And we're like, wait a second, Grandpa, I'm not so sure about that. But, times are different. And we are kind of spoiled now. Things are much easier. And it's nice having a climate-controlled cab to work in. And I guess I want to talk about your crops just a little bit, because you're kind of in one of these transition areas, Dennis, where we're hearing guys talk about shifting some acres. And I've talked to some guys that said, you know, I'm probably going to shift out of some soybeans because we're kind of on the edge of where we can really grow good soybeans. We might raise some more corn or something else. What are guys talking in your area?
Oh, I think it's a mixed bag. You know, there's guys that when they go in and they start figuring up the input costs and everything and what they can lock their corn in at in our area, because, you know, we're far enough away from real good markets that you got to really pay attention to that. The basis a lot of times is $1.40 or better. And, I don't know. I assume there's probably some guys that are looking that way, but I think there's still a lot of guys that are probably still looking at the bean because of the input costs and the market and everything.
Yeah, you're right about the input costs. I know for a number of farmers we've talked to this winter as we've traveled around that they say, man, it just costs me too much per acre to put in a corn crop or a wheat crop. I'm going to go with soybeans and go a little cheaper option on the front side and hope that the markets come around. You know, and there's just news each week coming out of China and what's happening with tariffs and how much grain they're going to buy. What do you hear on the Milo side? Are guys excited about that at all going into this next year?
No.
I just threw that comment in to make the soybean guys not feel so bad, Dennis.
Well, you know, Milo, it's kind of the stepchild in our area, you know. Guys, there's some of us that raise it some, but it's not like it used to be when I was younger. And the price is always cheaper than your corner or your wheat or any of that, too. So, you know, yeah, we've had some good, last fall we had some good crops. I mean, we had some fields, dry land, it was running from 140 to 165. And, you know, you can make a little money on it, but still the price per bushel is just not that great.
Nope, that's for sure. Well, it's good that we've got a few options. What about alfalfa in your area? Is that going up in acres? Is it just kind of hanging in there the same, or are guys tilling up some of that alfalfa and going to something different?
They tilled their alfalfa up here several years ago, quite a bit of it, you know, when the grain stuff started coming in. And a lot of guys, you know, never kept their equipment up and what have you. My brother does alfalfa, and that's his passion, and that's all he does. And it's really, you know, the way he does it, it's pretty labor-intensive. And a lot of guys don't want to get up at 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning and go bale hay either. You know,
nope.
They like to go home and get out of bed and do normal things. And when you're in the alfalfa business and you do it right, you're going to be up a lot of the time in the middle of the night and everything.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of things in agriculture. I don't think people appreciate, unless they've been involved in it, how hard guys are working and just the challenges to do things right. You know, certainly in Kansas, it's not the easiest place in the world to farm. Right now, Dennis is complaining because how cold is it, Dennis?
We had one below here this morning. Woo! And it's six right now, and our wind is probably 15, 20 mile an hour with gusts a lot higher than that, so... You know, it's cool.
Yeah, that's no fun, that's for sure. Well, Dennis, hopefully things warm up.
I did talk to the school bus fleet a little bit ago. I was locking in some fuel for next summer, and he runs the buses too, and he had a bus gel up this morning. So it's a wonderful time of the year.
yeah, no kidding. Well, Dennis, thank you so much. Good talking to you again, and good luck here going into the spring.
You bet. Thank you very much, guys. Have a good one.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum herbicide.com.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren, live in the Morton studio. It's Farmer Friday today. If you'd like to email us, it's radio@agphd.com. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We've got Kevin on from Pennsylvania. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Brian?
Excellent. So what's happening on your farm right now?
Weather has obviously been an issue, especially this part of the country. We weren't as cold as you guys, but last week was a really cold snap. So right now, doing a lot of work in the shop on the equipment. Just working on the combine right now, but we hope to get out, get some soil sampling done when the weather breaks. Today it's quite warm, so might get out and start some of that.
So when you talk about soil sampling on your farm, do you do zones? Do you do grids? How do you have things set up?
So we're into zone right now. That seems to work best for us. Just mm-hmm. the way our fields are laid out, it seems to be a little more efficient and kind of the way to go.
So on your soil tests, is there anything, let's say over the last 2 or 3 years, that's kind of stood out to you that you go, boy, I didn't really realize this before, or this is a different nutrient I've got to address, or you know, there's some other fertilizer that I need more of? What first pops into your head there?
Yeah, I would say probably we lack a little more in potassium on that side. So mm-hmm. Last few years we've been concentrating on, you know, upping our input on that. Potassium's really our where we need to focus on, along with some of the other nutrients.
So how are you getting that potassium out there? Are you putting potash out? Are you doing some more liquid with the planter? What's your plan?
A little bit of both, actually. The potash, obviously, and then we just got a new planter last season. So, you know, we have a capability with liquid fertilizer. We can do that now, mm-hmm. Whereas before we didn't. So, yeah, it's really a mix of both. And this past season has been our best. You know, as you guys know, I'm still new to the game, but with these new capabilities, it's really upped our yield.
So anything else new and different that you're kind of thinking about here as we go into 2019?
I would say some drainage, you know, tiling, trying to get some of that water out of the field that just hangs in there and kind of, you know, gives you those low spots.
Yeah, I was just up in Alberta, Canada yesterday, and we were talking about tiling a little bit, and so the guy's like, well, we're dry, we don't need any tile. And I go, well, how about just the low areas? Do you have any alkali spots? Well, sure, I have that. And I go, well, you don't have to tile a whole field, you know. You can do spots. I said, I'll show you some of the maps on our own farm. You know, I've got some fields where we only have a few lines in there that solved all the problems, and now things are great.
Right, and that's kind of where we're at, too. It's mostly spot tiling. It's not, you know, across the whole field. Rarely have that issue. So that's where we focus on right now.
Do you have much high pH in those areas, or is it high salt, or what's the problem down there?
High pH is really what we're running into, we found. So, you know, we did a little bit of that last summer when we had the chance. You know, we had to go in between some crops, things like that. Now, unfortunately, that's when we really can get out, is in season. You know, winters are so bad, and we don't have enough manpower in the fall or when that crop has just come off to do that. So But yeah, high pH, that's what we're running into.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned in-crop tiling. That's something I talk to people about all the time. And they kind of look at you funny when they first hear that, like, well, I'm not going to tear up my crop. And I tell them, well, look, first of all, ideally what I'm looking for is I want to be in there when the crop is less than a foot tall. So I'm not doing a whole lot of damage at that point. But I just say, you know, the biggest challenge we have a lot of times with tiling is just traction. If I have traction out there, then I can get my tile lines in pretty easily, pretty efficiently. And also the weather's a lot warmer once that crop is actually growing. It's a lot harder to get a guy to jump down in the hole when it's 10 degrees outside, you know, and have to deal with water and everything. So anyway, no, I'm with you. We've probably done, I don't know, 2/3 of the tiling that's happened on our farm in the last 10 years has been in crop. So the other thing, my dad talked to me about this when he first started doing some in-crop tiling. And he said, well, Brian, you know, one thing about it, now you're going to know for sure where you need the tile, because you'll have just gone through with the planter, and any areas where they looked a little bit questionable, that's probably where you're going to go back to first. And I said, yeah, you're right there, Dad.
Well, he is. And, you know, it's funny. I would have said the same thing. Wow, in-crop, that makes no sense. But
yep.
We actually, by watching your show, we saw some of the footage from you guys going in crop in season. And I thought, you know what? That's really a smart way to do it if you can't get out in other times of the season.
Right. So. Yeah, we actually have yet to have it show up negative on our yield monitor from doing in-crop tiling, because we're just pulling one shank out there. Crop's pretty small. Sure. It can usually recover pretty well. Well, hey, Kevin, it's been great talking to you. Best of luck to you here in 2019.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Sounds great. All right, Darren, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
Sorry about that. You got a question. This one is from Evelyn. I love to watch your show every week. I own a farm that has an area that always has poor yield. We thought it was limestone bedrock. It's only 1 foot down. We thought that was our problem, just shallow soils. But in 2018, we had enough rainfall. That area should have had plenty of moisture. And even with limited soil there, we should have done okay. A grid soil test found we have 1,000 to 1,400 pounds per acre of magnesium. I'm wondering, is this level too high? And if so, what can we do to lower it? This area also has limestone pieces on the soil surface.
All right.
And they're in Ohio.
All right. So she gave me some of the soil test information. 67% base saturation calcium, 31% base saturation magnesium. So is the magnesium really high? Yeah, that's pretty high. So
the other thing, these limestone pieces, I mean, to me, that sounds like free calcium. And if we've got free calcium, that really makes it tough to make changes in the soil. It just is another thing that's going to just increase the degree of difficulty a little bit of making some of those changes. But that doesn't mean that you just walk away and don't try and change anything, because
Yeah, but it's not super heavy ground either. It's 19 for a cation exchange capacity, so that's not crazy. I mean, my first thought here is, yes, over time it would be nice to address that magnesium, but it's one of the things where I say it's a long-term investment. You're not going to get 50 extra bushels of corn by dropping the magnesium today. So if it's me, I might be taking a look at my sulfur, first of all. How much sulfur do I actually have? Could I potentially add some gypsum, some elemental sulfur, something like that? The other thing that I look at on the soil test that actually really stood out to me is the base saturation K is down at 2%. So that's something that I'm absolutely going to be addressing and getting that up. She said in terms of phosphorus, and I don't know if this is phosphorus or phosphate, but she said 55 pounds per acre, which to me sounds pretty low. So I'm going to make sure that I'm fertilizing properly for phosphorus every year. I'm not saying that definitely hurt your yield last year, because, you know, 55 pounds isn't zero or 10 or anything like that. So you have some, but I would keep addressing that. Your pH isn't terrible. It's 7.1, so I'm not that worried about that. Would I like it just a hair lower for corn and soybeans? Sure. So I'm going to look at, is my drainage okay? When I have super high magnesium like that, a lot of times we have drainage issues. Do I need a little bit of tile through there? Do I need, again, some elemental sulfur once the drainage is good? Those are some of the things that I'm looking at. She also put down an interesting ratio here, Darren, magnesium to potassium, which most people don't give us that ratio. It's 18 to 1. Now, I don't really look at the magnesium to potassium ratio as much as I look at in the base saturations. I want my magnesium less than 20, and I want my potassium more than 4. Well, 20 to 4, that's a 5 to 1 ratio as opposed to this 18 to 1 ratio. So again, probably the first thing I'm going to spend money on is more potassium. Then I'll work on that magnesium thing, but I got to make sure my drainage is good too.
Yep. Yeah. Lots of little things, and you just start at the top and work your way down, and then don't go broke trying to do it by trying to do it all at once. And there aren't a whole lot of farmers that are in position to just say, well, let's just do it all right now. Now, if it's a very small amount of acres and you got a huge farm that's already paid for, well, you can certainly do some of those things. But yeah, really appreciate the info. Appreciate your support too. And thanks for the question today. We are taking questions today via email radio@agphd.com. We call it the Ag PhD mailbag. We got a number of those questions to get to right after this. Stay tuned.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. If you've ever got an agronomic question for us, radio@agphd.com is the place to send us your soil test or the question that you'd like to get answered. Got one from Warren, and he said, I'm going to be planting corn and soybeans together in a food plot for wildlife and want to know if I can use Treflan as a pre-emerge herbicide, work it in the soil, then come back and plant the seeds. If so, how long do I have to wait after applying before I can plant.
No, you can't. What that's going to do is, I'm not going to say it's going to completely kill the corn, but it's going to do very, very, very significant damage to the corn. So, nope, that's not going to work. What you could do instead would be to use a product, one of the group 15s that's labeled. So Outlook probably would be my choice, or Dual.
Metolachlor, yeah.
Or Zidua.
Yeah, and you can get some of those products pretty cheap, and I get it. Sometimes we're in a food plot situation, you say, man, I don't want to spend a ton of money on weed control, but yet I still want to do an okay job out there. Like now, with Metolachlor, Brian, I mean, I just push towards what the top of the labeled yeah. rate would be for your soil type and for soybeans and go from there.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. If it was me, I'd plant Xtend soybeans in there, so now and Roundup Ready corn. So now I'd be able to spray dicamba, and I'd be able to spray Roundup over the top. Plus, you could use one of the group 15s that we mentioned pre-emerge. You'd have a really good weed control program. And this is unusual because it's difficult to plant a grass like corn and a broadleaf like beans and still kill the weeds and have herbicide options. But that's what happens when we have some of the herbicide-tolerant crops like Xtend soybeans.
All right, Brian, we get a lot of questions about weeds that, in fact, some of these weeds we don't even find on our farm at all, which is a good thing, but they're prevalent in other parts of the country. Got one that said, how do you kill grape hyacinths? I don't even know how to say that. I don't even have that weed.
Hyacinth.
There you go.
Well, that's because it's often not considered a weed at all. It's in the same family as lilies. It's a perennial bulb. So how do you kill it? Certainly you can use Roundup. You can use Gramoxone. You know, these.
Yeah, and for all the people that say, well, I don't want to use herbicides, well, dig it up then. Dig the thing up. And that's the thing. Yep. You can't just pull the top off on some of these weeds and think they're going to go away. You've got to dig up that root mass. If it's something that starts from a bulb, you've got to get the bulbs dug out.
Yeah. If it was, let's just say, for example, in a pasture or a roadside ditch, I would consider Distinct. That's got two different modes of action, one of which is dicamba. You've got some options. Even 2,4-D, if you went with a strong enough rate, you'd probably do a good job. The key thing here is anytime you're talking about a perennial, you just have to make sure you're using a stout rate. If you're going to try to get by with just some watered down little rate, or especially if it's a homeowner and they say, well, I'm going to get this product at the hardware store or something, the odds are pretty high. That's pretty watered down. So you want to go to a crop protection retailer and get the real stuff, and then you'll have good control.
Got a little feedback. We were talking about ethanol the other day, and Kat sent some info. She said, or she, it could be he, I guess he or she, says, limiting factor on these ethanol gasoline blends in the winter is your weather. High ethanol gas causes knock, and at freezing, icy temperatures, some have start failures. Read your manual. There's a reason they're specifically declaring special fuel categories like flex fuel. Haven't you wondered why there's no 100% ethanol engine dominating the world? Well, Brazil and friends can have high ethanol ratios because it's hot there all the time. Hey, thanks for the feedback. I would agree with you in the fact that in my flex fuel E85 car, I did have an issue one time and it was 20 below here. That's the one time I've ever had an issue using ethanol blends through the winter for the last 23 years.
Yeah, but when you say that, occasionally there will be water that gets in there. I don't know that that was... I never had that, and I ran E85 for years and years and years. So I never had that one time, not a single time. And so yesterday I was in Canada, or a couple of days ago I was in Canada, and they were giving me a hard time, like, boy, I bet you think it's cold up here. And I go, no, actually it's colder back home right now. Where we live, it gets exceptionally cold and windy. The wind chill, 30, 40, 50. Last week it was as much as 60 below zero. That's Fahrenheit. Wind chill. So we're in that stuff. I don't worry all that much about these blends. I really don't. As long as you're using them properly in the right vehicle, things work out pretty fine. So no, I never had that issue, Darren. I just question, did you have bad fuel?
All right. Thanks for the feedback, though. We appreciate that. I got one from Brad. He said, I'm a pork producer and also an industry sales rep. I just wanted to thank you for your support to the pork industry. I think it helps all the farmers growing corn to take the side of the commercial pork producers. After all, that's where your corn is going. Hey, Brad, I agree with you. We all need to work together in agriculture, and I think there's too often issues that come up that we look at small amount of the issue that we disagree on, and we take different sides rather than the 90% of agreement that we do have. As farmers, we're such a small percentage of our country. We do have to stand together. So thanks a lot for that, Brad. I really appreciate the feedback, and glad to hear from the livestock side of things too, not just the crop side. Got a comment here. This one's from Aiden. And he says, hi, I'm a third grade student in Iowa, and I'm doing a report on 2,4-D. I need a few answers for my report. I need help on the safety of 2,4-D, what kinds of things you would mix 2,4-D with.
Wait, let's do it one at a time.
Okay.
Okay, safety of 2,4-D. 2,4-D is not a cancer causer. 2,4-D, the LD50, that stands for lethal dose 50%, is about 1,000 milligrams per kilogram of body weight when you look at like 2,4-D amine, for example, most 2,4-D amines. So when we talk about that, that probably means absolutely nothing to you. But let me just tell you that caffeine, and you know how many people drink coffee and caffeinated beverages, caffeine, the LD50, is 200 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. So in other words, it would take five times more 2,4-D to kill you than caffeine. So in terms of safety, it's actually quite safe. Now, I'm not saying that we want to drink it or are going to tell anybody to drink it, but I am saying in terms of risk factor out there, it's actually pretty low. Go ahead, Darren. The next question.
All right, next one. What can you mix 2,4-D with?
It can be mixed with most herbicides, with water, with liquid fertilizer. It can be mixed with a lot of different things.
And he said, my hardest question is, if 2,4-D, can it get into the water? Can it cause health problems? What are your biggest concerns about 2,4-D?
No. So in terms of 2,4-D, it's not really leachable out in that soil. That I don't know of any case ever where, and I'm sure it probably has been at some point, but I've never seen where 2,4-D is found in drinking water somewhere. Even if it was, again, the dose is so high that the odds that it would ever cause a problem are slim to none. But no, we don't have this issue where you're applying a whole bunch of it and it leaches through the ground, ends up in groundwater. We don't have any of that with 2,4-D.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for the question, Aiden. We really appreciate that. If you have any follow-up questions, you can sure email us back. Got one from Landon, and he said, I'm a young farmer, South Central Iowa, and I'm going to be involved in more of the decision-making process this year. My dad passed away 10 years ago. I'm now finally old enough to start working on this farm and turning some things around. I've got work orders in to get some lime applied to the ground, and that's really my first priority. But also, I need to know what to do on the P, K, S, and possibly micros. Last year, we had a 30-bushel loss from ear drop on our corn acres. We've got a ways to go. We're not equipped to put on liquid with the planter. We're looking to broadcast some dry this spring. It's ground that we own. And I'm also considering some liquid applications with my pre-herbicide.
Well, liquid with the planter is pretty nice because especially in ground like this where the fertility is pretty low, then I absolutely want to get some out there that's going to be available right now. So here's the first thing that I would say. We have a pretty big variance in soil pH. So I'm seeing as low as, 5.6 all the way up to 6.9. My concern is your grid size. If I've got 5.6, let's say that grid is relatively close to the 6.9 grid, which it looks like it might be. If that's the case, I'm probably going to tell you in that 5.6 where I think that I want a lime, I might go to smaller grids just in that zone. So in other words, I only want to put the lime where I actually need it. That's one of my big things. In addition, you just want to learn how to read a soil test. It's not that difficult. We talk to people about this all the time. You start with pH, yes, you're probably going to need a little lime in some spots. But you look at your base saturation Ks, they're all below 4%. You need a lot of potassium. Your phosphorus is low, your sulfur is low, your zinc is low, your manganese is low for the most part. Your iron's actually pretty good. Your copper is low in many spots. Your boron's low in every spot. So you do have a lot of things to address here. You're going to want to be working on that over the next few years. Fortunately, you do own the ground, so it's a good long-term investment.
Thanks for the question, Landon. As you got more questions that come up, please let us know. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio.